Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Mary Carillo, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So day four, and Catherine Whittaker and myself are back in the hotel lobby, and we're just trying to digest over two massive beers what has been going on today at the US Open. This is the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Amazon Prime Video, the home of the US Open in the UK. Catherine has been presenting all day. We've had loads of tennis, but we have had yet another enormous talking point. We did start this podcast once about half an hour ago, but on the way back to the bus, I fell over. So that sort of interrupted the recording. So we're back now. I've been nursed back to health. And Catherine, how's your day been?
Wouldn't be a US Open podcast without a bit of walking to the bus drama, would it? my day has been, extraordinary, really. I feel exhilarated and exhausted all at the same time. I mean, kind of for either of us in our roles, it's an absolute dream to have such a meaty talking point as what Nick Kyrgios and Mohamed Lehani has provided us with today, let alone the tennis and everything, incredible battle from Angelique Kerber, all the rest of it. So it's kind of a dream, but also elements of it are displeasing.
Yes, well, I'll tell you what, let's share the storytelling of this particular event. I'll describe what went on, because I was commentating at the time on BBC Radio. So Nick Kyrgios is playing. Nick Kyrgios is 6-4, 3 love down against Pierre Hugerbert, and it's all going wrong. Kyrgios is doing what he often does, which is look disinterested, not dialed in the slightest. Catherine, you seem to want to say something here.
I just don't want you to downplay it, because he was... I didn't see the first set. We were sort of alerted to the fact that there was a Kyrgios being Kyrgios event happening on court number 17. And he was hitting single-handed backhands. He was not running for shots. He was kind of... he was doing his thing where he basically says, I'm going to tank this, like he did against Borna Coric and ended up coming back to win it. Against Del Potro in Cincinnati. It was, I suppose by Kyrgios standards, it wasn't that extravagant, but it was more than just looking slightly disinterested.
Can I say as well, when I came into the commentary box at that point, it was already first set over. We hadn't started commentating on that match yet. We hadn't actually come on air yet. What I witnessed in the first three or four games of that second set made me so angry watching. And you know what a defender of Nick Kyrgios I am, and what a fan of his I am. And I often excuse his behaviour when sometimes I shouldn't. I got so furious. I wanted to tell him to sling his hook, frankly, and get out of the US Open. If that's your attitude, go and get lost. I can't be doing with this. At that point, Mohamed Lehani came down onto the court. I think it was at 3-love. And
I think it was 4-1.
Okay, so this is the situation. And the gist of it, now I understand what the protocol normally would be, is on the understanding that...
Sorry, it was 3-love.
Okay. He came down from his chair and he stood over Nick Kyrgios. And the gist of what I thought was going on, because I couldn't hear it all at the time, was that he was basically warning him that if you don't buck your ideas up, you're going to be in trouble with the rules because you're not giving your best effort. And that is a requirement on the tour, isn't it? However, this was a really protracted situation. Even just visually, you could see him standing over, and it looked like on the women's tour when a coach comes onto the tour and they crouch down and basically start giving an on-court coaching session. And the things that Mohamed Lahani was heard to say, and it was not all audible, but there was quite a bit of it audible. What can you perhaps give us a couple of highlights?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I absolutely can. I mean, what we definitely know was heard, and I won't quote anything that I mean, there are several things that we think we heard, but due to the quality of the audio, probably shouldn't be quoted. But what we definitely know was heard was, I want to help you. I want to help you. I've seen your matches. You're great for tennis. I can see that. I know this is not you.
Yeah. I mean, now what I think Mohamed Lahani was doing, and he's an umpire who I know quite well. I think he's a great guy, really nice person. I think he is a very good umpire. But what I think he was trying to do is effectively counsel and cajole a performance out of Nick Kyrgios for the sake of the occasion, for the sake of the integrity of the game, for the sake of all those people that were there that were starting to boo, and just get him to dial in and be a tennis player rather than an idiot, which is what he was being. Now, thereafter, after he left, the facts are the score turned around completely, and Nick Kyrgios ended up winning the match. Well, he took a tie break.
He turned it around from exactly that moment.
Yeah, it took a tie break, but he won quite comfortably thereafter.
Sorry, actually no, I should revise what I said. What happened was he at the end of that discussion, he said, "Oh, I'm going to call the trainer," and then he did call the trainer at the next change of ends, 4-1. The trainer didn't seem to do anything at all. Kyrgios said, "There's nothing wrong with me. Can you look at my wrist?" The trainer said, "There's nothing wrong with your wrist," That was that, but so 4-1, then it went to 5-2, and then there was the fight back.
Yes. Now, I know some people feel that, well, hold on, Pierre Hugobert didn't hold it together and he threw his serve in five times and so forth, but the fact of the matter is that the match turned around in terms of the way it went. We then had, after they left the court, we had Nick Kyrgios asked about it, and he said, "Oh, you know, he just came and he down to talk to me, and he didn't say much, but he just sort of said you need to try harder or whatever it was, or how are you feeling?" We then had a USTA statement put out, in which the gist of what they said.
Well, shall I read you some highlights?
Do please.
They basically just narrated what their account. Presumably an account they've settled on of events as a result of speaking to whoever they felt they needed to speak to. And so they talked about the circumstances, the fact that it was 3-love. Mohamed Lahani came down of his chair, quote, because of the noise level in the stadium during the changeover to make sure he could communicate effectively with Kyrgios. Fair enough. I've got no issue in principle with umpires coming down from the chair to communicate a message that they need to communicate. Fine. Lahani was concerned that Kyrgios might need medical attention. Lahani told Kyrgios that if he was feeling ill, that the tournament could provide medical help. He also informed Kyrgios that if his seeming lack of interest in the match continued, that as the chair umpire, he would need to take action. He again suggested to Kyrgios that he could receive medical attention, and at the next changeover, Kyrgios, down 1-4, did receive treatment from the physio. Now, all of that stuff might have been said, but let's just say those weren't the highlights of the discussion.
Well, they've missed out all the bits that you read out, really, which were
the bits that people are taking issue with.
Yes, because the accusation and the bit that's uncomfortable is that he was basically helping Nick Kyrgios deal with the situation and it felt like he was cajoling him and trying to get him playing. Well, that's coaching. That's not, or at the very least, that is not the delivery of just a, you need to put your best effort in or you're going to get fined or you're going to get warned, which is really the job.
Absolutely. Well, shall I share with you the thoughts of Pierre Hugues-Bert, who was quite strong in his press conference, but has obviously subsequently really digested the sequence of events and has released a statement this evening about the matter. He said, "After my loss in the second round of the US Open against Nick Kyrgios and the controversy that followed, I feel like I needed to give my point of view. First of all, I didn't hear the discussion between Leoni and Nick, and it did not affect me at all on the court," he's referring to. Nick, from his side, is not to blame, as he did not ask for anything, but his behaviour and motivation on court changed from this moment, and then he dominated the match. On the other hand, after seeing the video, I am angry against the umpire. He should not go down of his chair, out of his chair, and try to reason with Nick. Did this action affect the game? We will never know. I am even more upset against the statement of the USTA that is clearly taking us for fools. We all hear on the video what the umpire said to Nick, overpassing his functions. I think he means sort of surpassing the confines, the brief of his job. Error is human, but I still await explanations. When we players are making mistakes on court, we are sanctioned. Now, I have to say that, first and foremost, I've never seen anything remotely like that on the court, and everybody is prefacing their views on this with how much they like Mohamed Leoni, how popular he is. I share that. He seems like a lovely man. I think he's a fantastic umpire, or has been up until today. But I think that's irrelevant. I mean, I think what he did today, if he weren't a chair umpire, was a wonderful thing to do. If he weren't a chair umpire in the middle of a match, I think it was very impactful. You know, if somebody can get through to Nick Kyrgios, communicate the message that he was trying to communicate, brilliant. He's absolutely right. He could be great for the sport if you know, somebody's arm around the shoulder can do them. But all of that is completely besides the point. It's not just not part of his job to do that. It is explicitly, fundamentally prohibited from his job. I mean, he is unable to perform his job if he shows any signs of bias or of favouritism, and that is precisely what he did today. And it doesn't stop me liking him generally, as I say. But I think it was...
And that's even if it wasn't intentional. I don't think he was trying to influence the outcome of the match or anything like that, but he kind of did.
Doesn't matter
what... Or he certainly might have done.
It doesn't matter what his intention was. He's done this job long enough to surely have known, and the fact that he's never done anything like that before, he would have known that he was acting beyond his brief. And whether that's, you know, him trying to be a rock star and thinking, I can do this, I can bend the rules a little bit for the greater good of the game. And I don't doubt that the greater good of the game was a large part of his motivation. However, I don't see how he can continue to perform that role. I really don't. I don't want to grind the acts against him. As I say, like it would really sadden me to see the demise of a great umpire. But I just don't see now how he can continue. I mean, how can he ever? If I were Pierre Hugues-Bert, this incident is sort of hits all of my injustice buttons. I would be incandescent with rage. He's lucky that Pierre Hugues-Bert didn't hear any of it on the court, because I don't know. I mean, he seems like a lovely, mild-mannered kind of a guy, and we'll come on to that being a factor in a minute, because Roger Federer said, "Well, it wouldn't have happened if I'd been the opponent on the court."
Just to say, Roger Federer's response, and he came in straight afterwards, having beaten his opponent Benoit Paire in three straight sets. Roger Federer asked about this, said, "It's not the umpire's role to go down from the chair. You don't go and speak like that, in my opinion. He was there far too long. Conversations can change your mindset." And those are the key words, really, aren't they? That's the issue here, is that, you know, having a conversation like that can influence a match. And maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but, I mean, it's at the very least a coincidence.
Yeah, and it kind of doesn't matter whether it influenced the match, does it? Because the fact is, he did something which in itself, regardless of consequence, was so completely wrong. As I say, it's not like just committing a slight violation of one rule that's in the small print of your job. It is so, so fundamental to his job that he remains certainly perceived as unbiased. I don't know how you can get that back.
Hold on a minute.
As I say, I'm not out for his blood, or I don't want to see bad things happen to him. But I don't see how he can get back the thing that he needs to be able to do his job now.
Okay, well, Andy Roddick has tweeted. He said, "So first off, Layani is a good man who genuinely cares about people. I really like him as a human. He did something he shouldn't have. This is behaviour we should see more of these days. Unfortunately, it was the wrong time and place for it. Selfishly, I hope they go easy on him." Now, I don't agree with you. I mean, in terms of the severity with which I would want to deal with him about this issue, I just want to get to the bottom of what you actually think he should be having done to him, sanction-wise.
I don't know what sanctions are available, and we are still awaiting to be clear. So we've had that USTA statement, but the USTA have also confirmed that the matter is still under investigation. That statement isn't the end of the matter. So I don't know what category this would fall under, whether they have, you know, whether it would fall under the gross misconduct category. I don't know what categories they have available to them, and I don't know what sanctions are available for each category of offence, as it were. But and I don't see it in terms of, like, punishment. I just don't know how. I just don't know how he can do it. Like, how can he? Would you not have a problem with him umpiring your match? I would. I mean, it's all.
Honestly, personally, I think my view would be that if he realizes the problem, if it is made plain to him, look, this is what you did, this is the problem, you are going to, as a result of it, have to be sanctioned. I would like to think that I would actually accept that somebody can make a mistake and frankly needs to pull his head in and just follow the rules. And the rules are, yes, by all means, come out and say to the guy, listen, I don't think you're giving your best effort, stop doing that, otherwise I'm going to have to default you. If it is made, I think maybe the situation is that he's just allowed himself to become a little too relaxed in that particular role because he's put his personal interpretation on what his role is. I think that that's what's happened here.
I agree.
Now, he's got himself in trouble as a result of it because he's made a really bad call. He's made a really bad decision. But I do feel that that's a question, therefore, of just saying, making sure he realises that is not on and you don't do it again, mate. And then I do think, I think he's got enough good credit in the bank whereby people will accept that.
Well, you could well be right, and the completely, you know, the Andy Roddick side of me that agrees that he's a lovely guy hopes that you're right. I just can't personally see it. I just
people
think,
make mistakes. Once,
absolutely, and as I say, it's not about punishment. I'm not out for his blood. I don't want to see the guy punished. I just don't see how he can do his job now.
I think if he was doing it intentionally, that would be different to me.
No, because that makes it more about punishment. It's almost if it's sort of unintentional and his bias is like creeping out in.
I don't see it as bias.
Intention.
I don't.
Come on.
No, I don't see it as intent.
Who else would he do that with?
I don't think he is thinking, I want to help.
You're good for tennis. I mean, again, I'm very sympathetic with that sentiment. He is good for tennis. Mohamed Layani loves tennis and wants the best of tennis. Like, best for tennis. What, you know, that's lovely. But if he were umpiring my match, I'd be thinking, does he think I'm good for tennis? does he want me to win less because I'm not very good for tennis? I don't know. I feel like something is broken that can't, I don't know, maybe I'm big. I hope I'm wrong.
I think you're taking that a bit too seriously.
And if lots of players come out and say, look, if the guy totally accepts, I think the USTA statement here is a complete spanner in the works because just say, calling hashtag fake news and saying what we know happened didn't happen is an absurd way to deal with the incident, and I suspect there will be follow-up from the USTA. That is unhelpful.
They should have just stayed out of it and said that we are looking into it until such a point as they'd actually come to their decision.
And look, if players come out and say, I get it, he's held his hands up, he's got, as you say, he's got enough credit in the bank for us to be able to trust him going forward, I'm fine with that. I guess there still has to be some kind of official sanction. As Pierre Hugerbert points out, you know, the players are subject to those when they break the rules, and the umpire should be too. And if, yeah, I guess if the players back him on the majority, in the majority, then yeah, it's salvageable. But I personally question whether it is.
Otherwise, though,
I'm fine with it being salvageable.
Otherwise,
you see what I mean,
Catherine. But look how many times Nick Kyrgios has done things that he's done, including what he said to Stan Wawrinka, including what he did when he tanked that match. You know, he's punished, he's told, and you hope that that makes a difference. You don't throw away the key.
And the other thing here is that this whole incident is completely distracting away from the fact that Nick Kyrgios was tanking a second round US Open match, and that's appalling. His behaviour was appalling. And the fact that all of this happened, and the fact that everyone has pretty much agreed that Nick himself was blameless in this incident, that he didn't solicit that assistance from Mohamed Layani, has deflected from the completely separate issue of the fact that Nick Kyrgios was tanking a second round Grand Slam match. And it's appalling. It's not good enough. We know the reasons he does it. I'm sympathetic with a lot of them, but yeah, we can't spend another whole podcast psychoanalyzing Nick Kyrgios and mollycoddling. You know my feeling. It's a defense mechanism. If you don't try, you can't fail, and he's afraid of failing.
The funny thing is, as angry as I was, and I don't think I've ever been more angry, and he's done worse, but I think it's just the incremental build-up, really, of behaviour on court that just got to me, and obviously, I think maybe this sits the past quotes, because I still love the guy. I don't know why, but I just do. And I just love watching him still, because what happened in later on in that match, he played a couple of rallies. He was nice to a ball kid, and I ended up thinking, oh, all right then. Yeah, it's like you really boisterous, sort of unruly, badly behaved kid, and you're angry at them, and you want to teach them a lesson, and yet you still can't stop loving them.
This is, I have to give credit to my brother for this analogy. But he's the naughty kid at school that the teachers secretly love. It's him, and we do cut him too much slack. Mohamed Layani clearly cuts him too much slack. And yeah, it's good egg syndrome is what I always call it. That sort of fundamental deep down feeling that someone is a good egg, and that buys them an awful lot of credit. We do it with Andy Murray.
I don't even know if it is that good. I don't even know. I don't know the guy. I don't know whether he's a good egg.
You just get a feeling. As I say, a good egg feeling isn't necessarily scientific. It's just a feeling that someone is a good egg. It can be wrong.
Sometimes you can like a rascal, though, can't you, as well? Isn't necessarily always a good boy, and sometimes is really naughty, but you just kind of love
the
him anyway.
The naughty kid at school that the teachers love.
Yeah. Incidentally, I mentioned Stan Wawrinka. One of the first people that actually made public comment about this video footage was Donna Vekic.
And he and Nick Kyrgios responded first.
She said, I didn't know they were allowed to give pep talks, umpires.
And he responded by retweeting it with the comments, trolling her for, you know, oh, and you would know having lost in this. It already lost in the US Open or something, deleted that within a minute, and then put up another response that was sort of equally trolly. That stuff, for me, lessens the credit, lessens any impact of good egg syndrome. I have to say, perhaps wrongly, all of that, the bullying of Tsitsipas and that sort of online trolly, snarky, slightly mean stuff lessens the good egg syndrome.
He then put a third one up in which he said I shouldn't have tweeted so quickly after the match. Now I actually have
he did it twice.
I know.
I do have a little
bit of sympathy with that, because I think sometimes the worst thing you can do when you're hot and bothered and angry is tweet.
I agree, and he realised the error of his ways and deleted it, and you know, you forgive a mistake, but you don't forgive the same mistake twice in the space of 20 minutes, do you?
I mean, the one little slightly funny thing about this is that about an hour later, Stan Wawrinka then tweeted, "Shh," with a picture of himself with a T-shirt that said, "Silence, silence, silence."
Yeah, and do you know what else we haven't mentioned? The fact that Nick Kyrgios said when he was asked about his meeting with Roger Federer in round three, he said, "I'm going to compete my ass off." And you know that he bloody will.
And we'll all love it.
He's going to try his darndest for every single point. And we'll all be going, "Oh, isn't he great? Isn't this brilliant?" You know it's going to be an absolute classic of a match, because I think they've only ever played one set that hasn't gone to a tiebreak. And we're all going to think he's the bomb again. and yeah, I just...
You did that one other time? Yeah, same here. That really sort of sums it up, doesn't it?
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, well, that's taken 24 minutes. We've got 5 minutes left to talk about the rest of the day. What else happened? You mentioned Angelique Kerber.
Shall I rattle through it? Yeah. Kerber, unexpectedly taken to three sets, was in complete control, served for the match twice in the second set against Johanna Larsson of Sweden, got taken into a decider. Really topsy-turvy decider. Really, it was one of those that really felt like it could have gone either way. It wasn't a foregone conclusion. She kept breaking the Larsson serve, and every time you thought, okay, that, you know, the normal service will resume now, and she kept on getting broken back. But I think that, given Kerber's track record, this win, this dogfight, could be the making of her tournament, because let's look back at the first Grand Slam she won, Australian Open. She's match points down to Misaki Doi in the opening round. You know, she produces her greatest stuff as a result of coming through a dogfight. So, I think in the moment it was bad news, but after the fact it's good news for Kerber.
I'm still trying to work out what happened, because she was 6-2, 5-2 up, and I was watching that, and it was honestly a non-event of a match until that point.
Well, we were watching it in the studio, Daniela, Greg and I, and Daniela sort of let out this deep sigh and looked over me, and she said, "You know what the most annoying thing in the world is? When your opponent is down and out, and then they loosen up, they've got nothing to lose, and then they damn well start beating you." And she called it, you know, she could see her visibly loosen up, and obviously simultaneously the person in control starts tightening up, and it's a tale as old as time in tennis, isn't it?
Tale as old as time.
Oh my goodness.
But now,
guys, luckily there's only four. We've only got 4 minutes left.
Yeah, I can fit a lot of singing into that 4 minutes. The other one I was going to mention, kind of similar, watching Federer against Pair, because Pair goes through these undulations of interest, and he has some really dark times on a tennis court at times to Benoit Pair, where I don't like watching it. You know, he's a wonderful talent. It's exciting tennis, but when he gets dark and down, it's not a place I want to be with Benoit Pair. And what happens, it seems to me, this is just my sort of amateur psychiatry at work here, which is, he plays this match, he tries, he loses the first set, then he gets absolutely crazy and we see the nastiness. Then he goes down heavily in set two for a while, pulls himself together, makes it respectable, loses the set, gets into set three, gets down a break and basically just realizes I ain't going to win. And then he loosens up and then he starts playing extraordinary tennis. And then he's just basically a peacock and he's getting the crowd on his side, but he knows he's not going to win.
There was never a moment today where I really believed that Benoit Paire believed. Not a moment. I found him a very frustrating watch, David. I really do. I can only imagine how sort of the French press feel about watching Benoit Paire, especially in the context of this generation of fantastically talented French men that just seem dedicated to not delivering on their talent.
Gael Monfils lost today in retirement, 6-2, 5-4
right
to
you.
Kenny Shikori.
I should say that I'm particularly frustrated with Benoit Paire because I don't think Federer was that great today. 39 unforced errors.
It's different in the daytime, though, isn't it?
It is different in the daytime.
In so many ways.
Let's face it, the last time he played daytime here at the US Open, he was taken to five sets by Mikhail Yuzhny. So, look, the fact that he got through in three sets against a potentially dangerous opponent, I don't read, and let's face it, his match against Kyrgios will be night session.
There's no theatrical feel in the day session, is there? It's all a bit...
It was a flat match. It was weird. It wasn't one of those sort of uncompetitive matches where Federer's just being brilliant and everyone's sort of silent and in awe. It was like, Federer's good, but it's not majestic and sort of poetic and enough to carry a whole match. It's just kind of, oh, this is a quite boring, uncompetitive match.
That sums it up to me. We also had a victory for Yelena Ostapenko. She came back from a set down against Taylor Townsend. Alexander Zverev just continues his progress uneventfully. And that is exactly what Ivan Lendl is here for.
Absolutely. He's only once before in a slam won his opening two rounds in straight sets. So this is big, especially in the conditions. All about energy conservation for him. He has to be looking... at the bigger picture in the long term. I've seen him on the practice court with Lendl a few times and I've been terrified by the look in Lendl's eye. So, hey, maybe he'll need another couple of slams to work the real magic, but I wouldn't put it past the two of them to work the magic this time.
Well, I've got Zverev in the final, so I certainly think he's going to work the magic. Somebody else who's working the magic is Novak Djokovic, 6-1, 6-3 up against Tennis Sangren at the moment. So we'll see how he gets on tomorrow, no doubt. But that is just about the size of it for the Tennis Podcast today.
Hang on a second. Other things have happened today, David.
Like what?
Can I rush you through a few things? Sabalenka won, and she is going to play Petra Kvitova.
Oh, yeah.
In the third round. Sabalenka Kvitova, third round.
Who's winning that?
Not the tennis balls.
No.
I think Sabalenka's winning that.
No way.
Yeah.
Kvitova's winning the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously that could go either way, but I've got Sabalenka winning that. Sasnovich knocked out Kazakhina. That was the biggest seed to fall today. The 11th seed. Osaka lost two games in her victory. No one's talking about her.
You just did.
She talked after the win in Indian Wells, or a few months after the win in Indian Wells, about how much she struggled with the pressure after winning Indian Wells. She spoke very candidly, actually, about all of that, about kind of finding her feet in the tennis world again, and kind of as a result of that, everyone sort of backed off her and gone, okay, let's leave Naomi Osaka alone for a while. Maybe she needs a bit more time, and maybe that's exactly what she needs, to not need a bit more time, because she was brilliant today.
She was right. Tomorrow, Arthur Ashe Stadium starts at 12 o'clock local time, so 5 p.m. in the UK. Sloane Stephens against Victoria Azarenka. Honestly, we have got so much good stuff in the third round.
I tell you what, unless the second week is a ridiculous letdown, this is a brilliant Grand Slam.
Best third round of a Grand Slam ever, if you look at all the draws. Prove me wrong at Tennis Podcast. You've got a better one. Sloane Stephens against Victoria Azarenka. Serena Williams against Venus Williams, for goodness sake. That's the evening session match.
Vavrinka Raonic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And also Nick Kyrgios against Roger Federer. That's the day after. But anyway, after Stephens Azarenka, it's Rafael Nadal, Karen Khachanov. We've got Juan Martin Del Potro against Fernando Verdasco. That could have been Andy Murray. Imagine if that... Anyway, isn't. That's the last one.
Let go, David.
All right. We'll try and let go. We've on Louis Armstrong court, Barbora Strizova against Elise Mertens. That's a good match. Wang against Svitolina. Shapovalov against Anderson.
If anybody hasn't seen the slow motion video of Denis Shapovalov hitting a single-handed backhand with both feet off the ground, just set aside half an hour in your day today
and improve your life.
And make sure you watch it on loop, because I know we wax lyrical about Shapovalov, but I don't care whether you like the guy or not. If you don't enjoy that 3 seconds of visual poetry, then you don't like tennis. I tweeted today that I'd spent 10 minutes watching it on a loop. It's only a 3 second video clip, and I mean obviously it was a slight exaggeration, but I did sort of fall into a little bit of a trance.
Yeah, because what you do is you watch it and there's part of you that's thinking, wow, and there's also part of you thinking, how is he actually doing that?
Yeah. Has somebody like photoshopped this? Yeah, I mean, I'm falling into that trance again. I have a feeling that Shapovalov might pull off the upset, but then I also have a similar feeling that Kevin Anderson might win the US Open. So I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do about that one.
Right, well, I'm going to go Shapovalov to win. I don't know why, but it's just come to me. Probably won't happen. There we are. Catherine, lovely to talk to you. Go and rest up ahead of your early start tomorrow. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Amazon Prime Video UK, who will be on air in the UK from half an hour before play starts tomorrow. So 3:30, Catherine does this amazing pre-game show for half an hour, chats to Daniela Hantikova and all these other people, and show all sorts of features and talk about what's coming up, and they'll be going over all this stuff. It'll be amazing. And then we are also executive produced by Melanie Bowes, by tennisballs.com, by Triple S. How can I forget Triple S? Charlie the mascot, our ferret, and of course Le Manga Club is our sponsor. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.